Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Linda, and this is Soul in the City, and we are so glad to have you with us. I have an exciting show, and I'm so excited about it. I have Dr. Alan Allard, and we will be talking about the seven secrets of enlightened happiness. I'm just going to go ahead and give you a little bio on Dr. Allard. He is a former psychotherapist and has a master's degree and a PhD in counseling. He is a professional speaker and has trained and coached employees from organizations such as American Red Cross, Hershey Hotel, the FBI, McDonald's, Motorola, and others. Allen has been quoted in the New York Times, the New York Post, California Executive, and People magazine, and he's a frequent blogger and guest coach on a preeminent career and personal development website for women. Allen is the author of the e-book Mental Aikido, Rediscover Your Powerful Self. He is a life coach, business coach who helps his clients create audacious results in their life, career, or business. His specialty is in working with the subconscious mind for rapid behavior change, fulfillment, and happiness in life. He is so awesome. But we're going to come right back to him. We're going to play a little bit of Kirk Franklin, Smile, and then we're going to come back and have an exciting show. Be with us. Here we go. And Kirk Franklin and Smile.
Say,
life, then you gotta have something to have there. I want you to have joy, cause can't nobody take that from you. I'll see you. Bye. Y'all want some more? Y'all want some more of that?
Okay, smile. You look so much better when you smile and choose life, life more abundantly, and choose happiness. Hi, Alan. How are you?
Linda, hi. I am doing good. It's been a great day. How are you?
Me too. It's been fantastic. I really just rested today, and it was awesome. But I am so excited to talk about your new book, The 7 Secrets to Enlightened Happiness. So I'm going to just dive right into it because I need to know about that.
Well, I'm ready to dive into it. So do you have a question to start off with, or how would you like to proceed?
I have a question. How would you describe enlightened happiness? Let's start there.
Oh, that's a great question, and an important question, because it's very interesting. When I first wrote the book, which was just a couple of months ago, I just entitled it 7 Secrets to Happiness. And I kept feeling like there was something missing, something that I was not addressing. And then just literally a few days ago, it hit me that when we think of happiness, we can describe that a lot of different ways. So let me describe the two words, happiness and enlightened, as I'm using them. When I talk about happiness, I'm going to give a simple definition. And by that word, I mean simply feeling good about yourself and your life, or feeling good about the progress that you're making. So however someone would define, hey, I feel good, that's what I mean by happiness. Feeling good about yourself and about your life, or the progress that you're making. Where the term enlightened comes in is I'm referring to the intellectual, emotional, and spiritual insights that would shape our beliefs, our choices, and our behaviors. So when we put them together, I'm making a difference between perhaps what we could call normal happiness and even unenlightened happiness, because sometimes we can be happy in the moment. We can make some choices that make us feel good, and yet we haven't really looked down the road, and the choices that we're making or our behaviors have some unintended consequences built into them. And when those unintended consequences show up, then all of a sudden we're not so happy. We're frustrated. We're unhappy. We're miserable. So we might be happy right now, and that might not be such a good thing because we haven't really given much thought to it. We haven't thought about what's going to happen down the road. So when I'm talking about enlightened happiness, I'm talking about a happiness that is not only short-term, but that's also long-term, and the kind of happiness that we've given a lot of thought to. We have those insights emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually that have guided and shaped our choices, so that not only are we going to be happy with those choices and behaviors down the road, but they build together. And it's kind of like we use the term compounding interest. So if we invest the principal, and then it starts earning interest, and then we start earning interest on the interest, so it just starts compounding. And that's the way enlightened happiness can be. We make choices that are enlightened. We engage in smart, wise behaviors so that they pay dividends, so that they start compounding in interest over time. So that's how I'm using the term enlightened happiness.
Oh, and it's really good. I can see how that there would be a difference in that, and making the choices, and how those choices can affect our lives so much. So I really understand it.
Absolutely.
And so how would you describe the difference between happiness and joy?
Well, okay. You know, you had asked me that previously, and we use words and we think, okay, I know what that word means. And I thought, okay, well, what exactly does joy mean? And it's interesting because if you go to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, it defines joy pretty much as a elevated state of happiness. So for my purposes and our discussion tonight, I would pretty much use the terms in the same way.
In the same way. Okay. Okay. Because I've heard people say, like, to be in a state of joy is a little bit different. But when I looked it up, too, it really did say pretty much the same thing, in that those were different states. And basically, the states are choices. Like, do you believe it's okay? And I know that's sort of like off the cuff, but you can choose to be happy or sad or whatever.
Yeah, and you know, that's something important to take care of as we move on here in the beginning, because there was a book a number of years ago called Happiness is a Choice. And in one sense, it definitely is, but in another sense, it isn't. And here's the distinction. Happiness is a choice in the sense that we need to make a decision and we need to make a commitment to our own personal happiness today. So in that sense, how happy we're going to be and if we're going to add to our happiness takes a conscious decision today to say, I'm going to prioritize this in my life. I'm going to be conscious of it. I'm going to give it attention as I go through my day and as I go through my week. Now, where someone could say, well, it's not really a conscious choice, is this. We have a conscious mind and we have a subconscious mind. And basically, we live our life pretty much out of our subconscious mind, because consciously we can only pay attention to so much. And our happiness levels and what we're experiencing, our emotional states in any given moment, largely come out of our subconscious. So all of those beliefs, all of those perspectives, all of the conditioning that we've had from the early years of growing up and since have been stored away in our subconscious mind. And when something happens, like we're stuck in traffic or we're late for work, or maybe what someone would consider a positive thing, you know, you get some unexpected money. What happens is something happens, and then out of our subconscious mind, we have an automatic response. So in that sense, it doesn't seem like happiness is a choice, because it just happens automatically. So the thing that we have to do with that is we have to start reconditioning and retraining and reprogramming our subconscious mind, which is something that takes a conscious choice now. And that way our automatic responses, which don't seem so much to be choices, as they are just automatic responses, will give us more of the experience of happiness and well-being and fulfillment that we want.
That sounds good. I understand that. And I think you really explained a lot of that in the book. The book is really good, you guys. You have to get this book. So what are the 7 secrets of enlightened happiness?
Okay, I'm going to go through them all at once, and then we can come back and talk about them. And I will say that obviously these things that I'm going to talk about are not secrets in the technical sense of the word. I certainly did not make these things up, but here's why I'm using the word secret. These are things that we may know intellectually, but maybe not things that we have owned and integrated into our life and that we're using daily, so they might as well be secrets. So that's how I'm using the word. And the first secret to enlightened happiness is your perspective creates your reality. The second secret is master your self-talk and you'll master your life. The third secret is your vision is the blueprint for your future. The fourth secret is self-confidence rocks. The fifth secret is there is no substitute for self-love. The sixth secret is gratitude, the great happiness multiplier. And the seventh secret is action fuels your success. So there you have it, the 7 secrets for enlightened happiness.
And they are awesome. So just briefly, kind of guide us through them, and not like you have to give a lot, because we don't want to give the book away, but give us some teasers on like a little bit of each of those secrets.
I'll be happy to do that, and feel free to jump in with comments or your questions as we go along here.
Okay.
The first secret of your perspective creates your reality is really the foundation that all the other secrets operate from or flow from. And what I mean by your perspective creates your reality is most people would recognize that it's not really what happens to us, that determines our quality of life, our happiness, our well-being. It's what we decide to do with what happens to us. Someone, I think it was Charles Swindoll, long time ago, that said that life is 10% what happens to you and 90% your response to what happens to you. So our perspective is dictating and creating the life that we're experiencing. And what most people don't realize is that when we talk about the things in our life that we might wish had not happened or that we're currently in and we're not happy about, is we think we're talking about reality.
That's true.
You listen to people talking, you know, whether, you know, they've, I'll give some concrete examples a little bit later on. But when you hear people talking and they're unhappy, they're talking as if they're describing reality. But actually, reality is very subjective, and we know that because you can have two people in the very same circumstance that are feeling very differently about it and talking very differently about it. If you think about the times that people go through a divorce, most people are having an incredibly hard time. They're miserable. They're fighting. But I have had clients, and I'm sure that you've known of some people, who were actually feeling relieved, and they were feeling excited about their future, and they were working things out with the person that they were going through a divorce with. So
that probably would be me.
Okay. Well, you would fit in the latter pack, I would suspect. So you can have people going through the same situation. Two people lose their job, and one becomes depressed, and one is motivated finding a better opportunity. So we think that the events in our life, these things that we call reality, are really reality. But everything that we experience on the outside has to go through our mental filters, which is really our beliefs and our values.
Mm-hmm.
And once they go through those filters, they change. They're not the same thing. So now we put our subjective interpretation on what's happened. And that's why you can have someone say, you know, losing my job was the worst thing that ever happened to me. It just ruined my life. And another person can say, you know, losing my job was the best thing in the world for me because it wasn't, you know, something that I was excited about and I was kind of feeling burned out on it. And it forced me to get out there and find something better, which I did. So we can continue to talk about the things in our life as if they're reality, or we can recognize that we always put our subjective interpretation on everything going on around us, and we're really dealing with our hallucination of the situation, so to speak. And
I like
the
that.
More that we, yeah, it helps me to think of it in that way, because the more we realize that our belief and our perspective changes how we see things, and therefore it changes us, the more we can create a different reality for ourselves. So that's our perspective creates our reality. Now we come to master your self-talk, master your life. Self-talk is really our internal dialogue. It's that conversation that we are having with ourselves. And we are pretty much talking to ourselves all day long because we have a thought. We're evaluating things. We're making comments to ourselves about everything that we're experiencing. And most people don't pay attention to their self-talk because it's like the air that we breathe. We're so accustomed to it that we forget about it. And so that inner dialogue is going on. We're not paying attention to it. But the fact of the matter is that every thought that we have, everything that we say to ourselves is having an impact. It's having an impact on our body physically. It's having an impact on us mentally. It's having an impact on us emotionally and spiritually. So when we decide, I'm going to start paying attention to my self-talk, I'm going to listen in and see what I'm saying to myself, I think we're going to be surprised. We all know that there are, you know, some people that we would call negative people.
Yeah.
You know, if you work somewhere, if you're in a family, everyone can identify those people. But most would be reluctant to admit that they do that to themselves. So picture this, Linda. What if you had someone who called themselves your friend to follow you around all day, and they were constantly making comments that you weren't good enough, that you weren't smart enough, that you weren't going to be able to reach the goal that you set for yourself. And they said, well, Linda, maybe you just need to realize that you can't have what you want. You need to make do with what you have and be happy for what you have. How do you think you would feel at the end of the day?
They probably wouldn't be my friend any longer.
And it's
funny that we talk like that to ourselves all day long.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
When I have clients, particularly when I was doing therapy, I'm doing coaching nowadays, but particularly when I would do therapy, I would have a client to come in, and they would start off talking about all the problems in their life. And they would be describing what they didn't like, how terrible it was, so to speak. And of course, you know, I empathize with them because they wouldn't be in my office if they weren't having some real challenges. But they didn't realize, if we go back to the first secret, that our perspective creates our reality. And then we tie in the second secret of master your self-talk and master your life. What they didn't realize is that they were actually creating the very thing that they didn't want by focusing on it, by speaking about it, by bringing it to life by the energy that they were creating in themselves and sending out to the universe. So our self-talk is critically important. We basically can make ourselves motivated or unmotivated, happy or unhappy. We can make ourselves feel absolutely great about ourselves, or we can make ourselves feel awful about ourselves simply by the very words that we're choosing to use. So we need to be careful of and pay attention to our self-talk. And the more we change it to empowering, encouraging talk and conversation, the more we're going to feel energized, the more we're going to feel that we can take on anything, and then we'll end up doing it. The third secret, your vision is the blueprint for your future, is absolutely mind-boggling. And here's why I say that. Everyone has a blueprint, a mental blueprint for what they expect is going to happen for the day, for the week, for the month, and into the future. But again, most people don't pay attention to it. Now, one thing that I have my clients do is I have them actually, when we start working together, most of the time I'll have them start writing out what I call a life vision, and I'm sure many people have heard that term, where they just start writing out what their ideal life would look like, because I want them to start getting a very clear picture of what they want and where they want their subconscious mind to take them. But we have to realize that most people have never done that. As a matter of fact, I will tell you this, most of my clients over the past 20-some years do not find this a particularly easy thing to do, and there are reasons for that. But what I tell people is you have a choice. You can either get very, very clear about what you want so that your subconscious mind can take you in that direction, or you can continue to let your subconscious mind taking you in the direction that it is, because it's using your current life vision, your mental blueprint, to create what's been happening in your life. And when I explain that, you know, the person will look at me like, well, what do you mean? I really haven't spelled out my life vision. You know, you're asking me to do that. I've never done that. But in fact, we all have. Because it's what is in our subconscious mind of what we expect to happen for that day and for what we expect to happen for that month and later on in life. So however we were conditioned growing up, going back to that concept again, the beliefs that we took on, that our subconscious mind accepted about what we're capable of, where we're going in life, what life is going to be like, what our relationships are like, how much money we're going to make, all of that is locked in our subconscious mental blueprint. And that's what's explaining what we're seeing externally out in our life. Our subconscious mind has one job, and that is to create what it thinks we want in our life. So whatever's
true.
In our subconscious mind, those beliefs, those expectations, our subconscious mind is going to make happen for us because that's its job. So what I have people do is to start getting very, very clear by writing down on paper or on their computer, looking at different areas of their life and detailing, if my life really rocked, this is what it would look like. And as we do that and as we keep putting that to our subconscious mind over a period of time, then our subconscious mind starts understanding and believing, oh, this is what Alan wants. And then it starts directing its energy for those purposes and toward creating those outcomes. So that's why the vision is so important, because it's actually the blueprint that our subconscious mind is working on. And it's the same thing as if you would give an architect the blueprints for a house. You better give that architect the exact blueprints of your dream house, because that architect is going to build exactly according to the specs of your blueprint. And our subconscious mind is the architect in our life, and it's using the mental blueprint that we have for our future. Now, the four secrets of self-confidence rocks is simply referring to what we all know about, and Henry Ford referred to it, and many people have heard this quote, if you think you can, you are right, and if you think you can't, you're right. And that is so true.
It is.
Our level of self-confidence will pretty much determine what we attempt to do and how well we do it and what kind of outcomes that we achieve in life. So we need to check in and we need to ask ourselves, where is my self-confidence? What is it like? Do I have an incredible amount of self-confidence, which, by the way, most people don't. So it's not that we need to say, oh, what's wrong with me, because the fact of the matter is that most people don't have an incredible amount of confidence. But it is something that we can develop on a daily basis, and as we develop our self-confidence, then magic starts happening, because the universe is always listening to our self-talk. The universe is always listening to our thoughts, and the universe is always saying yes to us. So if I tell myself, well, I would like to make a lot more money, I would like to have my dream job, and then when I think about that, my self-confidence kicks in, the lack of it in this case, and what pops up is the thought, well, I would like that, but I just don't see it happening, then that belief coming out of my lack of self-confidence is what I'm going to manifest in my life. You know, we can see this on a practical level. When someone goes into a job interview feeling really good about themselves, they feel good about their ability to market and sell themselves in the interview. They believe they're a good communicator. They believe they can easily get rapport with strangers. They like people. Their self-confidence is very high. Well, the odds that they're going to ace that interview are pretty high. The opposite is also true. Someone goes in saying, well, the marketplace is flooded with people that are probably better, more experienced than I am, and doing interviews is never anything that I've liked to do. I always get nervous. Then that self-confidence, which is nothing more than a set of beliefs, is going to basically control things, dominate the atmosphere and our behaviors, and we're not going to impress the hiring manager. So we're going to talk ourselves out of the interview, simply because we don't believe in ourselves. So we need to take responsibility for our confidence and realize that if we do not care enough about our self-confidence to give attention to it and to grow in our self-confidence, it's not likely that it's ever going to grow, because why would anyone else care more than we care about our confidence? It's our confidence.
Oh, that's so true.
It's, you know, if I don't care enough about my life or my self-confidence to do the work that is necessary, it's not that other people don't care, but they're only going to invest so much in us. And the bottom line is, whatever they do, they can never do the work that we have to, because self-confidence comes from within, and all growth and transformation has to be done by self, and it has to be done from within. So self-confidence will explain why some people do incredibly well, why some people struggle, yet it's something that we can all grow in. But it takes that decision and that commitment, I'm going to do something about this. The fifth secret about there's no substitute for self-love is really getting to something that a lot of people feel uncomfortable with. And it's kind of interesting, because the topic of loving yourself has really been talked a lot the past couple of decades. I had a client just a couple of weeks ago to tell me, because I'd recommended that she read a book on that topic. And she came in and said, you know, I haven't even opened this book, and I have to tell you, I think that this subject is just overdone. And if I were to be honest with you, the truth is most people I know love themselves so much that the only thing they want to hear about themselves is compliments and praise. So that was her thinking about self-love. But the fact of the matter is that self-love is the foundation for everything. How I view myself, the value that I hold of myself, the capacity that I have to support myself emotionally, to recognize my strengths, to be patient with myself, to be empathetic with myself, is going to determine pretty much everything that happens in our life. If we look at it from the standpoint of someone saying, well, you know, I would like to have more money in my life, I would like to have better health, I would like to have a better relationship with my significant other, we have to look at, well, what do you think you're worthy of having in life? What do you really think that you're worthy of receiving? Because the universe can only give us what we're able to emotionally and spiritually accept. I'm sure you've heard of someone, you've been in their presence, and someone comes up to them and gives them a compliment, and they're very uncomfortable with that compliment, and they kind of laugh, and then they say something to pretty much give that compliment right back to that person. That happens
all the
time.
And I do that sometimes. And I have to catch myself and say, just say thank you sometimes, like thank you.
Exactly.
To accept
exactly.
it and to internalize it.
Yes. And you know, that's a great suggestion, Linda, because it's something that we can do. It's simple, and yet it is very powerful. Because let's say that someone comes up to you and says, Linda, I want to give you $100, and they hand it to you. And you say, oh, I can't take that. You know, there's nothing to warrant that. I didn't do anything to earn that. And you give it back to them. Well, the universe is coming to us every minute of the day saying, I want to give you more happiness. I want to give you more love in your life. I want to give you more money. I want to give you more health. I want to give you more of all of these incredible things. And we look at the universe and we say, well, I can't accept that. I didn't do anything to earn it. So that's an indication of a lack of self-love, not being able to take compliments or not being able to receive help from people. So we always need to check in and say, where is my level of self-love, my ability to accept myself, to embrace myself, to fully support myself, because if I do not like what's going on externally in my life, if I'm wanting more of certain things, then I have to ask myself, what am I willing to do to increase how I think about myself, how I feel about myself, so that I can receive more of what people want to give me and what the universe wants to give me? And if we don't do that, we're going to continue to have those holes, like holes in a bucket. And when people or the universe is pouring things into our bucket, it's able to, keep some of it, but most of it just leaks right out. So self-love is an area that many people are a little uncomfortable thinking about, because it's a natural inclination for everyone to think, well, I love myself. Well, my question would be, if I love myself, then why am I not getting more of the abundance and more of the love and more of all of the wonderful gifts that's available all around me? And my answer to that would be, because I need to do some more work on my ability to receive, which means I need to develop a higher level of thinking and a higher level of opinion about my worth and what I'm worth receiving. And that brings us to the sixth secret of gratitude, the great happiness multiplier. Now, gratitude is another one of those subjects that has been talked about a lot. A lot of books have been written about it. But what's interesting to me, Linda, is that for as much frustration and unhappiness and depression and misery that there is, and there's a lot of it. In fact, I'm continually amazed at our ability to tolerate incredible amounts of pain in our life. From an emotional standpoint. So then someone comes along and says, well, let me tell you how you can have a happier life, where you can feel more fulfilled and enjoy things more. And here's an example. Dr. Martin Seligman, who is one of the founders of what is called positive psychology, for years he's been telling people to simply write down three things a day that makes them feel grateful, three things that they were grateful for. And it could be something as simple as they were grateful for the cup of coffee they had this morning. They're grateful that they have eyesight. It could be they're grateful that they have a car to go to work in. But what he says is that even with serious cases of depression, if someone will do this very simple activity, and I will say that if someone is depressed, clinically depressed, then this is obviously not as easy for someone else who's not depressed, but it is still doable. And what he says is it will have a measurable impact in elevating their mood. So if we want to be happier, then we have to think in a more enlightened way. And we have to realize that gratitude is one of the things in life that is our response to life and to the gifts that life and the universe gives us. And I was thinking the other day that if I am not regularly and continually expressing gratitude, why would the universe see any real reason for me to have more? In other words, the thinking is kind of like this. Alan doesn't seem to be very happy with what he has. He's complaining about what he doesn't have, about this and that. So I don't think if he had more, it would make any difference, because he's not able to be happy with what he has. So something really incredible happens when we start becoming more conscious and more aware and more grateful of what we do have. We start attracting more of that very thing into our life. It's the same principle as if we are grateful for the friends that we have and we let them know that, we're communicating that by saying thank you or in many other different ways, then they're going to want to be around us more, aren't they?
So true. Yeah, and it's so true. I have a good group of friends, and that's one of the things I appreciate about. We all tell each other how much we're grateful, and it just makes you want to be around that person or give. It makes you
exactly.
want to give to that person when they are grateful for even the smallest things. So, yeah, I could
exactly.
see how that could multiply in the universe and how God would send that back to you. It's like saying thank you, God, for any little thing. It's like the Father wanting to bless you even more because you're happy for what you have at this moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, this is something that we can understand, but until we put it into practice, until we internalize it, we don't understand the power of it. You and I, and probably most people, like to give to other people because it makes us feel good. You know, when we donate to a charity, when you know, we go and volunteer at a homeless shelter, or we go and help a neighbor out, it's not as if we're not getting any benefit from that. We're getting a lot of benefit. It makes us feel good about ourselves and about our life. So we understand that when we give to other people, when we help them out, it makes us feel good. What we don't quite understand is that when the universe, when God gives to us, when other people in our life give to us in whatever way, small or big, that when they see that gratitude in us, when they see us responding in a way where they know that we really appreciate it, then that prompts them to want to give again and to give more. So if someone is wanting the universe to give them more, if someone is saying, I just don't understand why God is not answering my prayers, I don't understand why God is not giving me what I'm asking for, that's a good time for them to check in and say, well, am I focused more on my problems? Is my self-talk more marked by talking about what I don't have, which is a form of complaining, or is my self-talk and my behaviors coming from gratitude? And I bet you it isn't. But the more that we come from gratitude, the more the universe delights in giving to us and will give more. The bottom line is, if I'm not appreciative of what I have, then it would probably not be a good thing for me to have more. So gratitude is the great happiness multiplier, and we can start very simply by writing down three things a day that made us feel happy. That's another way of saying that we feel grateful. And I can guarantee that anybody who does this, do this for 30 days, and then call me or email me and tell me if that doesn't have a profound, incredible impact on your life. And I bet you'll notice that things start popping up, things that you've been looking for, things that you've been wanting. Doors will be open, solutions to problems will appear, all because we have focused on what we have more than what we don't have. We've expressed our gratitude, our thankfulness for it, and we'll find that we're getting more and more of that because, as we've heard it said so much, like attracts like. So the more we're grateful, the more we get of that which we're grateful for. And that leads us to the seventh secret to enlightened happiness, that action fuels your success. And this is a really big deal, and it's something that needs to be emphasized more, because until we take action, there's really not any reason for us to expect that things are going to get better in our life. And the challenge, of course, is if you don't feel like taking action, then how do you take action? And it starts with realizing that success is fueled by action. There's a phrase that's pretty common. It is, success begets success. And I understand that to mean simply that when we take action, we set into motion. We are sending out the energy. We are planting seeds for that which we want to manifest in our life to start the process of manifestation. So I can sit around and I can complain about not having a better job, or I can do something about it. And what I tell people is we need to start very simple and start very small and go from there. Because oftentimes what we'll do is we will say, well, I want a better job, or I want a better relationship, I want more money, and then we'll have these big plans. We'll think on a very big scale, and actually it's so big that we're not ready to start taking action.
Mm-hmm.
So the key is to pick an area of your life that you would like to improve. And I often recommend for people to pick an area, and if they want to think in terms of, okay, what's a problem in my life? Because people can always identify that. Then write down what you think is a problem in your life. I'm going to use the simple one. Someone says, I need more money. So write down on a piece of paper, I need more money. And then write out 10 things that you can do to take action on that will take you in that direction. And the first three or four things that will pop in your mind will come to you very quickly, and then it might be a little tougher. But if you stay at it, you can come up with 10 things. And let's say that someone says, well, you know, I probably need to change some of my beliefs about money. That would be a good place to start. So they write down, change my beliefs about money. And then they think, okay, I probably need to start a special savings account, one that I'm not going to, you know, touch. I'm just going to, even if I put a dollar a week in it, I'm not going to touch it. So once you have your 10 action items down, you go to the one that you think is the simplest, and then you start taking action on it that day. And then you continue taking action on it to build the momentum. And once you have that going, then you go to the second most easy action step and you start taking action in some form on that. So if someone says, I need and I want to have a better relationship with my significant other, then they write down 10 things that might help out with that. And so they may think, I need to be more of a partner in taking care of the house without being asked. I need to initiate going on a date with my significant other. I need to, compliment my significant other at least once a day. So they start making their list, and then, again, they go to the easiest one, and they start taking action on it. And when they start taking action, they're going to find that everything around them starts to change because the universe loves action because it shows that we're committed. It shows that it means something to us. It shows that we're serious. And until we take action, there's no way for anyone to really think that we really mean what we're saying, is there? So
no.
Action is always important. And I'll say with that, oftentimes I will hear someone say, particularly by the time they get to me for coaching, and they're wanting help on something that they consider a big challenge, they say, well, I've done everything I can do. I've tried everything. And that's never the case. Never the case. And even if it were the case, we could go back to those things and we could modify it a little bit. We could put a little twist on it, and now it becomes something different. So we've never done everything that we can. We've never done all that we can do. And what really usually happens is when we get discouraged, we do less and less and less, but then we're expecting to see more and more happen to our life, and it just doesn't work that way. So that's an overview of the 7 Secrets to Enlightened Happiness.
And I think that was awesome. And I read the book, you know, actually during the time I had just gotten in an accident. It really kind of helped me out and kind of put some things in perspective for me. One of the things I really liked, I'm kind of going a little bit forward, is you stated that for many there's a knowing and a doing gap, and a lot of people's happiness gets lost in that gap. Explain that for us. I guess that kind of goes with the whole action thing too.
Yeah. A lot of people have either read or heard of Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And he uses this in his book. It's been around for a long, long time, but he really drove this point home. And he has an illustration in his book where he says that an event happens and then we respond to that event. But in between the event and our response, there is a gap. And that gap is where our choices are, and that's where our power is. So if we think about that and then take a look at the knowing-doing gap, we can look at it in a couple of different ways. We say that we know something, but then our life fails to show that we really believe it because we're not really taking any action. We say we know something, but we're not doing anything about it. So let me use a common example. Someone says, I know that I need to exercise on a regular basis, but you ask them, well, how's your exercise program going? And they admit that they're really not consistent with it, or they've been thinking about it but not doing it. So what we really mean is we have heard something and we give intellectual assent to it, but we really don't believe it.
Mm.
If someone is not doing something that they say would be helpful to their happiness and their well-being, and then they say, I know to do it, what they're really telling me is they don't really believe what they say they know. Because if they really believed what they say they know, the action would follow. So we have to dig a little bit deeper, and we have to say, let me get honest with myself, and let me find out what I really believe about X. And so in this case, if it's exercise, the knowing-doing gap means that I think I believe certain things about exercising, but I really don't believe what I think that I do. So if I were talking with someone, I would likely find that they would say, I don't have time for exercise. I don't have the money to go to a gym. And what is really the belief that is underneath there are two beliefs that's keeping the doing part. And that is, they believe that it's too difficult for them, that it's going to be too hard to do, meaning they're going to hate it. And so it's just, it's an ordeal in their life. So when they think about exercise, what they really believe is, this is going to make me miserable. I'm not going to like this. And that's what's really keeping them from the doing. So someone can know that exercise is good for them, but then end up not doing it. And when that is the case, I say, well, let's look underneath what you say you know, and let's find out what your real beliefs are that are coming out as procrastination and not doing. And when we work on the level of those beliefs and change those beliefs, then everything changes. The other belief that people often have is, well, you know, I can exercise and I can eat well, but it's probably not going to make that much of a difference because I've tried it before and I really didn't get in better shape. I really didn't lose weight. So until they change those beliefs, then they've really fooled themselves into believing that they know something, that they believe something, and they really don't. And that's why there's that gap between the knowing and doing, which really, that gap means they don't ever end up doing it. Did that answer your question?
Okay. That definitely answered the question and also helped me. Happiness is a choice, or we kind of talked about that, in a sense that we decide to be happier and learn how to do so we live and learn how to do so, so we live on an autopilot. I kind of got that out the book. And as you stated in your book, do you feel that some people decide to be unhappy, and how does that show in their lives?
Well, I don't think that anyone consciously ever decides to be unhappy. I think that kind of goes against how we're wired and how we're built. But I do think that what happens often is that in childhood, in the experiences that someone has, they make a subconscious decision to not be happy. I was talking to a client just a couple of months ago, and this guy had a very abusive father. Probably if we had 100 people in the room, there might not be anyone else, or there might be one person that had a mom or dad that was this abusive. This father would tell him on a regular basis that he was stupid, that he was worthless, that he was a screw-up, but he didn't use that word. He used another word that I'm not going to use right now. And he said, you are never going to amount to anything in your life. You are going to screw everything up because that's who you are. And he would physically assault him. Now, not many of us go through that kind of abuse, but when someone goes through that kind of abuse, or someone goes through much more subtle programming and conditioning where they somehow get the idea that they're not worth much, that they're not very capable, that they're not very smart, that they're just not good enough somehow, then they can subconsciously make the decision to dramatically limit their happiness because they don't feel that they deserve it. And that is done on a subconscious level. The person is not consciously aware of that, but this goes back to the self-love. We're only going to be as happy as we feel we deserve to be happy. And if growing up as a child, we have experiences in the home, in school, in churches, with our friends, with authority figures, where we're even unintentionally given messages that we're not good enough, we're going to subconsciously make a decision to limit how much we can become, how much we can achieve, and how much happiness and fulfillment we're worth and can deserve. It's a pretty dramatic thing, but I think that happens a lot.
I think you're right. We have a caller, and caller, are you on the air? Hello? Okay, maybe they just don't want to say anything right now. I'm going to say it one more, caller, and you're in the air. Do you want to speak right now? Well, we'll put you on hold, and you can listen to the rest of the show. So the next thing I was talking about was mindset. How does mindset come into play? And you kind of talked about that with the happiness that we experience in our lives.
Yeah. Mindset is another word for perspective, and mm-hmm. our mindset and our perspective is everything, because our mindset, our perspective, is what drives our emotions, it drives our choices, and it drives our behavior. So we could look at it this way. Let me use the word thought and thoughts for mindset. Mm-hmm. Our thoughts or our mindset leads to our feelings, our emotions, and our emotions lead to our behaviors, and our behaviors lead to our results. That's the way we create things in our life. So we have thoughts or our mindset that leads to our emotions. Our emotions lead to our actions and behaviors, and our actions and behaviors lead to the results that we see manifested in our life. So if we want different results in our life, we have to go all the way back to the first driving force, and that would be our mindset, our thoughts, our mm-hmm. perspective, and of course we're also talking about our self-talk. If I want to change the results in my life, I have to go back to the first cause. Every effect has a cause, and I need to go back to the first cause, and that is my mindset, my perspective, my self-talk. When I work on that level, and get the level of my perspective, my mindset, my self-talk, my thoughts on a different level of consciousness, a higher level, an enlightened level, then I will start seeing the results in my life to start changing. That'll happen just as surely as the sun comes up every day. And someone can say, well, the sun might not come up tomorrow. And if someone really believes that, I will take every cent I have out of my bank account and investments, and I will bet them that the sun's going to come up tomorrow. So when we work on our mindset, we can pretty much be guaranteed, we can be guaranteed that everything in our life will change for the better.
I so appreciate, this has been great. I think the book is awesome. I really want to encourage everybody to get the book. Alan, tell us how we can reach out to you versus, you know, email or whatever. So just let us know how we can reach out to you.
I will be happy to do that. I'll be happy to do that. I would be happy to give a free PDF version of The Seven Secrets for Enlightened Happiness to anyone who takes some action. Now, normally, I would just give them a link that'll take them to my website where they can download it. But as I told you earlier today, I ran into a little technical difficulty, and I won't get it straightened out until tomorrow. So for anyone listening to this now or later, you can email me and just put free ebook in the subject line, and I will get it back to you right away. And you can email me at alan@alanallard.com, and I'll spell that for you. Alan is spelled A-L-A-N, so alan@alanallard, and Allard is spelled A-L-L-A-R-D, so alan@alanallard.com. If you'll take action and shoot me an email, I'll get you a free PDF version of the book. If someone has a Kindle reader and they want it in Kindle format, then they can go to Amazon.com, and it's only $2.99 there.
Well, we thank you. The book is awesome. I just want to tell you I've gone through it a couple of times now. Really was helpful for me at a time when I was kind of down. So I really encourage everybody to go out, get the book, get it on your Kindle. Just really, it has some really insightful and some great things. Alan, I want to thank you so much for being a guest again. Very enlightening. I just so appreciate when you share with us because it's concise, it's to the point, and it's very, very enlightening and helpful. So thank you so much.
Well, you are very welcome. I had a great time, as I always do with you. You're a great radio show host, so thanks for having me, and I wish everyone the very best.
Thank you so much. Well, there you have it. This is Soul in the City, where we inspire to go higher and higher in the spirit. Be blessed because you are. Be grateful because you are. And it's a multiplier, like Alan said, and be happy. It's a choice. Try it out. Have a great week, everyone, and I'm so glad that you come get into the archives. Email Alan if you're interested. So just be blessed, everybody, and I'll talk to you next week. This is Soul in the City, and this is Linda. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Alan. Bye-bye.